Well, first of all, welcome everybody. We're going to start the call in just a moment, and a special thank you to our guest speaker this evening, Dr. Jonathan Shore. So we'll conduct this the way we normally do. I'll conduct a formal interview for the first maybe 45 or 50 minutes, and then for the last 10 minutes, I'll open up the lines and let some of the other participants ask their own questions. So for those of you who don't know Dr. Shore, let me give him a quick introduction. Dr. Jonathan Shore was born on August 6, 1943 in Cape Town, South Africa, and he graduated from the University of Cape Town Medical School in 1968. After 4 years of hospital practice, he spent a decade of intensive study in many different disciplines, including acupuncture, Tai Chi, massage, Jungian psychology, Gestalt therapy, bioenergetics, Rolfing, radiesthesia, iridology, herbal medicine, Bach flower remedies, and color therapy. So really a very wide spectrum of different healing modalities. In 1982, he was appointed to the post of clinical and executive director of the Holistic Health and Nutrition Institute in Mill Valley, California, and this is one of the first institutions of this type in the United States. Dr. Shore has taught worldwide since 1983, in addition to intensive teaching as a core faculty at the Hahnemann College of Homeopathy for over a period of 15 years. He's taught in seminars all over the world, including Australia, Austria, Bulgaria, Canada, the Czech Republic, Japan, England, Finland, France, Germany, Guatemala, Holland, Mexico, New Zealand, Norway, Poland, Romania, Scotland, South Africa, Spain, and Switzerland. In 1992, Dr. Shore was awarded the membership of the Faculty of Homeopathy in England, and he is on the editorial board and is a past editor of the Journal of the American Institute of Homeopathy. In 2004, along with his co-authors Annika Hoagland and Judy Schreibman, Dr. Shore published the seminal work Birds, Homeopathic Remedies from the Avian Realm, and this has pretty much become a standard reference on bird remedies. In addition to his numerous articles and publications such as the British Homeopathic Journal, Homeopathic Heritage, the Journal of the American Institute of Homeopathy, Links, Millimum, and others, Dr. Shore has also included written books such as Tracking the Similimum, Materia Medica with a Difference, Pediatric Case-Taking and Prescription, Remedy Action and Second Prescription, and The Art of Prescription. So obviously somebody who's very well-versed in homeopathy, has been a member of our community for many, many decades, and really somebody who has a lot to offer to for all of us. So, Dr. Shore, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Right. Jesus, hearing all that stuff.
It's kind of ridiculous.
Quite a little daunting.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. So, Jonathan, I thought we would just start. We're talking about the bird remedies. And, you know, there's many very well-known homeopaths who basically claim to never use new remedies at all. And I'm curious, what is your feeling about the need for new substances, since you've written a book specifically on bird remedies?
Right. Well, I think, of course, all these issues, in a way, they require fairly long-winded answers, because there's no simple answer to this issue, and it's really clear to me that there are people who get very good results and do not use the whole plethora of new substances which have been out and proven, and then there are others who almost rely on these new substances to provide their cures. And I don't actually have a... I have three parts to the answer.
Okay.
And I think I'll take the first part, which is just my simple and basic experience, which is how I came to all this stuff in the first place. And it arose from a case from a young woman who I had treated for quite some years with a variety of remedies, especially cannabis indica, I remember, and natrum phosphoricum, I remember, and phosphorus, and they all helped. And yet, she kept on coming back. And all this time that I was treating her, she was giving me these dreams about collecting feathers and building wings. And I had, at that time, totally no place for this information. It wasn't in the repertory. And so it wasn't identified in my mind as a usable homeopathic symptom. And as well, I myself am a pretty pragmatic sort of guy, and I don't go for symbolic interpretation. So I didn't sort of go that route. And I just couldn't use this information. I just put it aside, and I kept on treating her, and she kept on coming back. And slowly, I was exposed to the work of Rajan Sankaran, and slowly it started to filter through to me that maybe she needed a remedy from a bird. Like, who else would build wings? And it was, her dreams were very clear. I mean, she would have dreams of recognizing the wings, which were somewhat incomplete, but she recognized every feather that she'd ever collected and where it was in the wing. And finally, she had these dreams of being pinned, dreams of an eagle being pinned down. And then she was in a hospital, an animal hospital, and the eagles, all eagles, were reaching out to her for help. And so I couldn't, how shall I say, I couldn't help it anymore. I just had to give her a remedy, but I'm trying to emphasize that this was totally against my grain. I'd never done anything like this before. And it so happened that, of course, the only remedy aside from sparrow's nest and ovi gallum polliculi was eagle, which Jeremy Sherd proved. And so I gave the eagle 30C, and she was completely transformed. And this sort of started in me a whole series of events. So I have to say, my experience has led me in this direction. That's the first part of the answer. The second part is much more theoretical, but it's possible that we need these new remedies because the destruction of, I would say, organic life, the destruction of all the animals, that energy, it's got to go somewhere. And it's possible that it's entering into people. And we need the remedies to neutralize this. And then the third option, which is a little closer to my experience, has to do with the belief of the practitioner. And a certain unconscious belief of the practitioner and a certain confidence, which I believe is tremendously important in the healing process. And this comes about, so I learned when I was studying, I was, I'd say, a serious disciple of the Tulkas, and we all knew that coffee antidoted remedies. And I saw how coffee antidoted remedies. And as the years went by, I became exposed to other countries and where people, coffee didn't antidote the remedies. And people even took the remedies in coffee. And slowly I sort of came to the understanding that there was much more to this than appeared on the surface. And that there's a whole realm of stuff which is set up by, I would call, unconscious expectation. And so I believe it's quite possible that some people do not need these new remedies, that they are completely coherent in their armamentarium of the old polycrats. And then there are others who need the new remedies to get the results. It's really, homeopathy for me is a mystery in a way, and there's so many things we don't understand. So this is the best explanation I can come to, and I have to say in the end, my own experience has been that the remedies which I have worked on have been very useful to me.
Very interesting.
In many different ways, and maybe I just add a bit to that, that this particular process, especially these bird remedies, in a way there was no, I didn't make any decision to pursue this line of investigation. It developed its own life, that this young woman who got such a good result from the eagle, and by the way, we're talking now maybe 12 or 15 years, she's never needed a different remedy. Her mother was a student in the Hahnemann College, and so I had this idea. I went to her mother and I said, look, you and your for your student project, because each student had to do a kind of project, a thesis, I said, you and your daughter will choose a bird, and you'll do a proving for your project. And the bird they chose was the red-tailed hawk. And so this was the next one in the lineage. And then people just started to send me bird feathers. Just without any sort of asking of my own. So it was a very, we'll say, personal, organic process. I'm not a theoretician in that sense. I don't sort of do things because I have some theoretical expectation. I do it because I don't know. I have to do it.
Jonathan, do you still consider yourself, with what you just talked about, do you still consider yourself to be what's referred to as a classical homeopath?
A homeopath.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I would have to say there are those who would absolutely not put me in that category. I've had actually some discussion around this, and classical, one remedy, chosen according to the law of similars, and I myself am very big on proving. I don't give a remedy which hasn't been proven. And if I want to give a remedy which hasn't been proven, I will prove it first before I give it. So in that sense, I'd say I fall within certain criteria. At the same time, I have a question for myself about this, that I've become more and more interested over time in I'm trying to match the nature of the substance to the nature of the individual. And in a way, I believe, and I'm not a real organon scholar, but as I've understood it, Hahnemann emphasizes quite strongly that the method is the treatment of the deviation from the norm, is the treatment of pathology, in a way, energetic pathology, not only physical. And I feel like, in my case-taking, I'm as interested in what the person really loves about their life as I am in what they've come to me to get rid of. So I'm looking for really who this person is, and this person, what their special skills are, what their talents are, what they love, as well as what their problems are. And if I can bring these two together, then I feel I've matched the nature of the person and the nature of the remedy. So I'm actually, in that way, not exactly, I'm not focused on the pathology. I don't know if that makes sense.
Jonathan, you mentioned proving, and
yes.
I'm just curious, the proving methodology you described is a little bit unorthodox. Could you tell the participants a little bit about your methodology and why you've chosen such an approach?
Yeah, so I experimented quite a bit with what we'll call seminar provings, in which I would give remedies to people at seminars and then collect information about their dreams and their physical experiences. And I actually gathered quite a bit of information. I did the latrodectus. In Finland and in Australia and in New Zealand and in Germany, and I collected hundreds of dreams and stuff, and they were very coherent. And in fact, the first bird proving that I actually did was the red-tailed hawk, was a seminar proving in Germany. And a very sort of classical proving in Arizona, which was done by the student, and the results were very similar. They were very similar, but what happened with this bird stuff was, it's the only time it's actually ever happened to me. And I've waited for years for it to happen again, but it never has. I saw this woman who I'd seen quite some years before. Given her Ignatia, it worked well. And now, like 6 years later, she came back. And I took the case, and I saw why I gave Ignatia, but I just felt this is not the right remedy. And so I carried the case around with me in my briefcase for a week, more than a week. And I never even took it out to study the case, because somehow I knew that I didn't know the remedy. And yet, you know, the voice said, I just give her Ignatia. And another voice said, no, you know that's not the remedy. And this whole struggle was going on inside of me. And one evening, I was sitting at my desk, and I pulled out this envelope with all these feathers which people had sent me. And I was just looking through them, and there was this beautiful feather, red and blue, and I had no idea. It had a label on it, said, Ara Macau. And I thought, what's that? And I looked it up on the internet, and I read the first three sentences, and I knew that this was the remedy for this woman. I just, you know, it was one of those things where I just knew it. And, of course, there was didn't exist, so we had to make it. And so we set up a colleague of mine, a friend, actually. We set up an evening in which seven or eight of us sat down and we triturated the remedy. We made the remedy up to a 3C. And that experience was so remarkable for me that it actually, in fact, became a whole line of investigation. So from that time, we started to do this kind of trituration proving, because the experience of it was, it's kind of, it's unbelievable. People don't believe it unless they have experienced it, that when you sit down and you start to grind the remedy, the whole energy in the room completely changes. And whatever the people start to talk about, later on you can see how it's related to the remedy. So this was just so interesting for me that we started, and so we did a number of bird provings in this way. And then later I became, along with Lisa Timmerman, we did a seminar, and she separated out the triturations. So we did the first C1, and then hours later, or at the end of the day, we did C2, and the next day C3. And that was also so amazing, how every trituration was quite different in its energy from the one before. So I thought, whoa, I have to see whether this is true. So I set it all up for myself and organized it and did it over here. We actually did a sea turtle. Took us a year to find the substance. But we did it, and it's true. It was the same. Every trituration was really different. So that already set me off on a whole other sort of line of investigation of potency. But anyway, I think in my mind there's so much to be said for this method, where it's both, it's not complicated, it doesn't require a huge setup, it doesn't require a whole bureaucratic organization. It just requires some people to sit down and do it. And the information which comes out is really remarkable. And I'm not, in a way, I think the very best proving, very best, is one in which the trituration proving is done, the standard sort of proving with the journals kept over time is done, and all the information is sort of collected together. So I'm not really saying, oh no, this is the way to do it or that's the way to do it. But one thing I'm really clear on is that the people who say, oh no, there's just this way, that's in my experience, a terrible mistake.
Jonathan, you've talked quite a bit about the importance of provings and how you conduct provings. I'm curious, do you ever feel that it's possible to prescribe a remedy that has not been proven, and do you ever prescribe non-proven remedies? I mean, is it absolutely necessary to conduct a proving to prescribe something?
Well, lots of people prescribe in all sorts of ways, right? I mean, people write remedies on a piece of paper and put a glass of water on top of the piece of paper, and then they give the water to the person, and the person gets better. For myself, I feel, I can't articulate it really well. I myself, as I say, the only way to give an unproven substance in my world is to have a remedy from it. And if you're going to have a remedy from it, then it's got to have been made. And if it's been made, who's going to make it? I'm going to make it. And then I will have approving symptoms. And then if I want to give it, I'll give it to the case. And then we can see, does the case correspond to the proving symptoms or not? So that's my idea. I don't care what other people do, in a way. I put it this way. I've been around for long enough now that I've seen it, all sorts of things can happen. But I have certain interests myself, and that has to do with having the symptoms of the remedy match the symptoms of the person.
Jonathan, you've done a lot of work on the bird remedies. How do you see this grouping in terms of what they're going to bring to homeopathy? I mean, do you consider them a significant class of remedies? Do you feel that... What is your perspective on that?
Yeah, it's a long time since I used to keep in a really extensive records every case where I felt a remedy had acted. I'd list it down and divide it into categories and the reasons for my prescription. And what I found, I give you this background because it's sort of... interesting that when I had collected some 200 or 300 cases, I broke them down in the order of frequency of the remedies, and I compared my results at the time, and mine was like cases where the remedy had definitely acted. I compared that to the Hahnemann laboratories, to their total prescriptions. So, of course, they didn't know whether the remedy had acted or not. But, like, their top 10 remedies and my top 10 of those which had acted were almost exactly the same. I think at the time I had more carcinosin than the Hahnemann Labs statistics, simply because I had been investigating the remedy and I understood something about it. And the most common remedy was sulfur, and it was 5 or 6% of the total prescriptions. So in that way, so I would say, taking it like that, like the spiders as a group were about 3% as a whole group. And I'd probably put the birds somewhere in there, 3 or 4%. Now, in my practice now, they're much more, I guess, A, because I'm interested in them, and B, because what you're interested in, you know, that's, you attract that kind of thing. But I have seen, really, there's so many people now who really know more about these birds than I. They have many more cases. It's actually really quite common. And because I've taught in all these different countries, I've seen over the time how people who never heard of the remedy when I first taught them are now prescribing, as I said, much more often than me. So I think it's a significant category, yes. As long as you take into account the overall statistics, where like sulfur was the top and it was only 5 or 6% of prescriptions.
You know, Jonathan, one question that I like to ask people, and I like to ask this of you as well, is when proving these various bird remedies or remedies in general, do you feel that the part that you're proving makes a difference? In other words, you know, is proving the feather of a bird the same as proving its blood or, you know, its claws? Or what is your feeling on this?
Well, I've done some experiments on this for myself. And so the first bird that we did, we actually made two remedies, one from the blood and one from the feather and the scraping of the talon and the beak. And when we collected the results, I sort of gave the result to someone who didn't really know anything about it, and I said, look, can you see the difference between these two? And they said no, they couldn't. And for that reason, I totally opted for the feather, because it was just so much simpler. And then, some years after that, I did had a chance in Paris to do. It was 100 people, and we did this extensive proving experiment where we actually sent out. We did lac equinum, but it was wonderful. We sent out 15 placebo and 15 verum to a group beforehand. And then the others, when they came, we divided them into two groups who triturated the tail hair of a stallion and another two groups who did the milk of a mare, and another group who didn't do anything but who had actually had symptoms before they came to the seminar. And in the end, the only difference between at least the mare and the stallion, the tail hair and the milk, was that the stallion, and it was the only time I'd actually seen that, was that people had sexual associations around the mortar and the pestle. But the rest of the stuff, you couldn't tell the difference between the stallion and the mare. So I don't think it matters.
Interesting.
And neither do I think, and this is really based a lot on my experience, that I can say for sure with the birds that it doesn't matter the individual characteristics of that particular bird, that they don't, the individuality is not expressed in the proving, in the remedy. What is expressed is the whole grouping. And I have seen this through my own, how shall I say, errors of explanation, and when I read other people's provings, they attribute the injury in some part to the symptoms which are arising in that part, and I see that that's just a bird's symptom. and it's totally got nothing to do with that particular individual bird. So I'm not sure what that's like for the other animals, but I know that I'd say for the birds, they don't have exactly. Maybe I put it this way: we have this totally total emphasis on individuality, on me and mine, and I just don't think that, at least with the birds, that that kind of comes into it. You know, I'm not saying that each bird doesn't have a certain character, but in its expression, and certainly in the expression of the proving energy, that individual character is 0.002%, something like that. So no, I don't think it matters which part.
Jonathan, I'm curious. Are there certain themes that you found are found in one class of birds but not in another?
Yes and no. And the first caveat to that is my experience is actually with the larger birds. So I do not have experience with small birds. And then actually I believe there's a difference between large birds and small birds. And I was visiting Aliza, and there was a book, Lou Klein's book, and I started to read his information on the birds. And I was reading, I thought, wow, he's living in a different world from me. I don't recognize the stuff. And, you know, I brought this up to Lisa, and she said, yes, but if you look, his information is from the small birds. And I thought, oh. So there's one possibility where there's maybe really a difference between the little guys and the big guys. In the ones which I have had some experience with, the bird themes run through them all. The main difference, at least which I can say for sure, has to do with the meat eaters, the raptors. They get inflammation of the throat, pharyngitis, tonsillitis, stuff like that. Whereas the water birds, the swan, the ducks, these guys, they get globus. They have constriction and swallowing difficulties as opposed to inflammation. And that also, I'm not sure about this, but I'm starting to think that also in the water birds, and if we take sort of exemplified by the swan, the water and there's an element of grief which comes out stronger in the water birds than in the others. But that's actually as far as I can go with that. And even all the water birds, even the eagles, the hawks, the vultures, the swans, they all have almost all the same symptoms. It really depends on the emphasis, on the axis, which brings out this bird from that bird.
Jonathan, when you use the birds, or just in general when you practice homeopathy, how much attention do you put on the miasms, and if so, how do you use them?
Yes. I'm not much.
Okay.
actually, not much, which is not to say I never think about them. That's not so. But I don't, they don't, unless it's like really obvious, it doesn't form a significant part of my analysis. And I think to some extent, so I followed Rajan Sankaran actually really closely up to the time when he started to introduce the miasms. And I sort of, I guess I made a decision. I thought, no, I want as little between the patient and myself as is possible. And I don't want another sort of grid to interpret the symptoms through. And so I really turned away from thinking in that way at the time. I think that's probably the best explanation.
Okay.
And this, of course, is not in any way based on the idea that I don't think it's a good idea, or that one can't use or shouldn't use the miasms or any stuff like that. This is simply a personal preference, what I want for myself, in a sense.
Jonathan, you know, in your book, you review a lot of different remedies. I'm curious, are there, maybe just because there have been new provings or whatever, but are there more bird remedies than what is simply listed in your book?
Oh, yeah. I've no doubt. In fact, I have to say, I just ordered the book by Peter Fraser.
Oh, sure, yeah.
because I thought, wow, he's got like 16 or I don't know how many, 20 or 30. Wow, I better read up on these. you know, people are going to ask me. So, yes, I feel that's definitely so. And it was never intended as the final word on anything. And the only, what I can say, though, is that I feel, and I have not had any reason to believe otherwise, that there's none of the information which we've given in the book is the whole story. I'm sure about that, and so I feel if one can absolutely prescribe without seeing that information, and the remedy can act. However, what I'm really sure of is if you do see that information, the remedy will act. I'm really satisfied with. That the information which we've given is solid, and it can absolutely be relied on, but it in no way encompasses the whole story.
Mm. I mean, that's, you know, what people want to know more than anything else is that the information is reliable. How have you basically generated that information so we know that it is reliable data?
Well, pretty much. I've taken my own provings and verified them with clinical cases.
Mm.
That's it. For me, approving is theoretical until it's been shown to have a actual real-life practical application.
Mm.
And then you can see, oh, yes, this is true. So the actual data which comes from approving, no matter how it's conducted, is, for me, is only half the story.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I did with my own provings, and then with other people's stuff. We found clinical cases which clearly showed support for that information.
Mm.
And where we couldn't find it, we didn't put it in. You know, so I'm sure there were remedies which existed, which we left out, because there wasn't a good enough proving and there wasn't good enough clinical confirmation. That book is totally non-speculative in the data.
Jonathan, what did you think of the Opus interface for your bird work? For the
Oh yes, yeah, I loved it.
Yeah,
I would say I have not, of course, because it's incomplete. I haven't really had the opportunity to run it to its depth.
Sure.
But I would say I've been really happy.
Yeah.
With the design, yes,
I think it came out really good as well.
Yeah. I was. That's. I would say this bird stuff. This book is one of the few things which I've done which I've actually been really happy with, where I felt I couldn't think of how I could have done it better.
Oh, that's great.
You know, not in my life. There haven't been many of those.
Oh, that's really nice.
I'm pretty critical, but and I would say that the Opus interface, it comes close to that category. I thought it was beautifully done.
Great. Well, let me go ahead and let some other people ask some questions. Before I do that, let me just make a couple of announcements. First of all, Dr. Shore is going to be offering a seminar. It's a 3-day seminar. March 4th, 5th, and 6th in 2011. It's being sponsored by the Los Angeles School of Homeopathy. And the title of the conference is Penetrating to the Essence, Homeopathic Investigations into the Doctrine of Signatures. And if you want more information about that seminar, again, it's March 3rd, 4th, and 5th. You can contact the Los Angeles School of Homeopathy. Their email address is lahomeopathic.com, or I guess that must be their website, lahomeopathicschool.com, and their phone number is 310-772-8235. That's 310-772-8235. Also, Dr. Shore was mentioning his excellent book on bird remedies. And we do have a special for those people who have the Radar program. They can actually purchase the book linked to the illustrations that come with the Opus program, and that's currently on sale for $60. Normal price is $90. So you can just contact us at our website, customer support or whatever, and we can help you with that. Okay, let me go ahead and open up the lines and see if some other people have some questions. Hold on. So any questions for Dr. Shore?
Yes,
go ahead. Somebody there?
Well, that was a quick question.
Sounded like a barking dog.
I'd say the answer is yes.
So any questions for Dr. Shore?
Yes, I have one.
Go ahead.
Hi, Jonathan.
Hi.
This is Gloria St. John.
Oh, hello, Gloria.
Hello. I saw you dodge that miasm question, but I'm going to repeat it because so many of the animal remedies have been nicely sorted into miasms. Would you not have even a guess or a hint with the birds for us?
Oh, no. I have all sorts of opinions. And I would say that the birds look like tubercular, or they can look like a cancer. But I am not convinced that looking like and being are the same thing. So, for instance, in the birds, this desire to travel and the need for freedom would seem to be really tubercular. At the same time, I feel that this need for freedom and desire for travel is actually inherent in the nature of the bird. And so it's not arising from a pathological process. And therefore, it doesn't carry the same intensity of discontent. It's not consuming them. It's just part of their nature. And of course, when you interrupt, when you interfere with the expression of someone's nature, then there's a series of compensations, of problems which arise. But I don't believe the problem is a priori pathological. Whereas I think tubercular is an a priori pathological condition. Does this make sense? Am I answering your question?
It's been wonderful. Thank you.
And let me say, it's the same for the cancer. The same idea.
Hey, thank you. Other questions for Dr. Jonathan Shore? It's your opportunity. Any questions?
Hi.
I would like him to expand on the, he says it's the same for carcinosin, but what is the same?
Yes, what is the same is, in the birds there's a definite, in many of the cases, you see a kind of perfectionistic streak where it's really important to get it right and to do it right and to have things ordered. And at the same time, it's not arising, I don't feel, from a breaking down of the structure. So in my understanding, sort of a cancer is an anarchy. It's where the cells do not obey law, and so there's this huge potential for chaos. And so you see it in the alcoholic family where it's completely chaotic and the kid feels that it's their responsibility because, of course, they're young and sensitive and that it's up to them to hold it together. And from this arises a sort of long story of pathological behavior, inappropriate behavior, shall we say, at a later stage. Whereas I have the sense that in the birds, in human birds, the nervous system is the sort of target system. And as in Ignatia, there's this very sensitive appreciation of I just have to find the word. How shall I say that there's something to be said for doing it right. And that doing it right, it's not necessary arising from pathology. It can arise from an appropriate place. And I have not seen in the birds that this emphasis on, we'll say, control or getting it right or having it ordered is strong enough to make a central pathological case from.
Jonathan, I have a question. Is there any other... We're going to have to end the call fairly soon, but we've got 5 minutes. But my question is, are there any other groupings that sometimes make you think of bird remedies because there's certain similarities, but there's something that's different about it, or is there any grouping like that you think of?
Yeah, I did get this idea from the provings about drug remedies.
Hmm.
And the idea came because in every proving which I did of the birds, there was mentioned some or other drug. Absinthe, opium, love drug, cannabis, each proving had the mention of a drug. And so I wasn't that interested in which drug was mentioned, but the fact that this ran through, and then the idea that, of course, nobody takes a drug other than to be somewhere where they're not.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole idea of freedom and of going somewhere else. And so I did a number of drug provings to try and see for myself what the actual situation was.
Interesting.
But I can't say it went very far. Mm. Nothing has been resolved around that. You know, it was one of those lines where it didn't carry through.
Mm.
And the other one, which I'm starting to look at now, is butterflies.
Mm.
those might...
We'll have to have you back to do another call on that subject. Unfortunately, Jonathan...
Yes.
And in just a couple of minutes, and I want to give everybody a chance to say thank you. It was a very, very informative call, a lot of very good information. I thought it was very, very interesting myself. So if we could give North American thank you.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you, guys.
Right. Thank you so much.
Hi, everyone, and thank you. We've got to end right on the minute because the call is going to end right on the hour. So thanks, Jonathan, very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.